We are glad to make all of our JCast Network podcasts free for our listeners. However, they are not free to produce and host. Please consider making a donation to JCast Network to help support our work by visiting jcastnetwork.org/donate. Thanks for your support.
The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app. Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. We've got a great show for you today. In this half hour of the show, we'll have Arthur Horowitz, who's the publisher of the Detroit Jewish News. The Detroit Jewish News is celebrating 75 years of publication and also the new Davidson Archives of the Jewish News and the Jewish Chronicle going back 100 years. You can look up all that stuff. You want to know when your grandmother got engaged, if they were doing it in Detroit? Might be there. The portion of the week is the portion of Akev, which can be found in the book of Deuteronomy chapter 7, Moses continuing his soliloquy before his passing. We've got a wonderful assortment of Jewish music sprinkled throughout the show. Awesome Hasidic story all the way at the end. You'll want to stay tuned all the way till 11:56 for that. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. Hundreds of Israeli Arabs rioted in Jaffa after an Arab wanted in connection with a shooting was arrested. About 300 Arabs threw rocks at police, smashed storefronts, and set dumpsters on fire. Two Arabs were arrested. An Israeli employee of a supermarket in central Israel is in serious condition after being stabbed by a Palestinian terrorist in the supermarket. The terrorist was arrested on the scene. A group of masked teens attacked members of an Israeli soccer team playing in Poland. Two players who were slightly hurt. The Polish government condemned the attack. Five members of Hamas in the West Bank were arrested for money laundering nearly $210 million. Funds from Turkey were diverted via Haifa to Hamas terrorist cells in the West Bank and Gaza. The Senate Foreign Relations Committee passed the Taylor Force Act, which puts conditions on the Palestinian Authority to stop using foreign aid to pay terrorists and their families. The Palestinians currently get $300 million annually in U.S. aid. Taylor Swift was a U.S. veteran who was stabbed and killed by a Palestinian in Tel Aviv in 2016. And finally, the West African island nation of Cape Verde announced that it would no longer be voting against Israel in the United Nations. The decision came following a meeting between Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Cape Verde's President Jorge Carlos Fonseca. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music, and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000, or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. We have online Mr. Arthur Horowitz, not a newcomer to the Jewish Hour. He's the publisher of the Detroit Jewish News, which is celebrating 75 years of publication. How are you, Arthur?
I am fine, Rabbi. Thank you for having me on your program.
It is indeed our honor. So I remember when I first came to Detroit back in 1988, that there was a young man by the name of Arthur Horowitz who was employed at the Detroit Jewish News and was helping out Mr. Phil Slomovitz. Tell us about Phil.
Well, first of all, Phil Slomovitz was a man of great vision, even though he was legally blind for a big chunk of his life. I mean, he was a Zionist from the get-go. In fact, back in the early 1920s, when he himself was in his early to mid-20s, he was among the people who helped to reconstitute the Zionist Organization of America in Detroit, very active in the Jewish National Fund. And he'd been the editor of the Jewish Chronicle, which was a weekly Jewish newspaper that was serving the Detroit Jewish community starting in 1916. Didn't quite see eye to eye over time with the owners of the Jewish Chronicle, partially related to his very proactive positions on Zionism and the need and the correctness for the Jewish people having a nation state of their own. Of course, this predated the Holocaust when he was having those opinions. And then he had an opportunity in 1942 to start the Jewish News, had considerable community support, including from most of the leaders of the Jewish Federation at the time. And God bless him, he was writing a column every week right up until the early 1990s when he passed away, I believe at age 96.
He was a really incredible fellow. I remember Phil.
He was passionate. He was cut from a different and special cloth, and in many ways, you know, what the values and focus that, you know, he put into the Jewish News when it was created on day one, March 27th, 1942 was the first edition. You know, we still have a good piece of that DNA in the Jewish News today.
Pretty incredible. So you got involved with the Jewish News before I did, so somewhere before 1988. So when did you actually come on board the Jewish News, Arthur?
I came, moved here with my wife and my then 2-year-old son in 1986.
So it's over 30 years for you. Newspapers have changed a whole lot since 1986. So what has the Jewish News, the Detroit Jewish News, done to adapt to those changes, Arthur?
Well, on the one hand, Rabbi, we are not immune from the overall shifts that take place in how people access information, receive information. But unlike the metropolitan daily newspapers or the more general circulation magazines, we have a particular niche, and that is the Jewish community. And the Jewish community, compared to the general population for sure, is well read, is interested in current events, but also, you know, the Jewish News is still, for a significant part of the community, a place where, you know, once a week, thinking of the print product at least, wherever you are geographically in the community, whatever your vocation, avocation, you know, maybe the one thing a significant percentage of people across a good chunk of the spectrum are doing on a Thursday night is receiving and hopefully reading the Jewish News and seeing things about their community that are both hopefully reinforcing, maybe challenging, hopefully reflecting reality, but seeing people who are part of the Jewish community who often don't look or act exactly like we do. And then, of course, with the web and with social media platforms, one thing I find interesting is today we, meaning the Jewish News, have more people looking at our content, given print, www.thejewishnews.com website, social media postings, repostings, et cetera, than we've ever had, even at our highest peak circulation periods, where the only way we were disseminating information was in print. So it's constantly a tightrope walk. It's a juggling act to have information the way the community wants to receive it, and at the same time knowing that there are much bigger and broader trends that we have to continually try to be very creative in our thinking about in order to maneuver and navigate them.
Understood. If you're just joining us, our guest today is Arthur Horowitz, is the publisher of the Detroit Jewish News, celebrating their 75th anniversary. 1942, conservative Judaism was the major faction. Most Jews in America belong to the conservative movement or identified with the conservative movement. B'nai B'rith, the Jewish war veterans, these were very active and vital organizations. 2017, most Jews do not identify themselves as conservative, and B'nai B'rith is Jewish war veterans, not so much. What has the Jewish News done in philosophically to remain current with people like I would never, even if I was a veteran, I wouldn't belong to the Jewish war veterans. For those, sorry to those people who are listening out there. And my kids who are millennials, I don't even think they know what the Jewish war veterans is. So what is the Jewish News doing to remain relevant, Arthur?
Well, I think the first thing that it starts with is trying to reflect reality, and reality is, you know, kind of the backbone of credibility. So in an era, Rabbi, unfortunately, of fake news, alternative facts, whatever you want to call them, false narratives, et cetera, I think one of the things that we still strive to do is to be credible, at least try to be credible. So I think that, you know, regardless of where you are on the age spectrum or whether you access content the old-fashioned way or you know, through your handheld device or other means, I think one of the things that continues to be recognized and appreciated is the issue of believability and credibility. And then I think the other thing that I found to be very helpful and very useful is, parallel to the Jewish News, Rabbi, there's an independent nonprofit, the Detroit Jewish News Foundation. And what the foundation did was digitize, thanks to support of really hundreds and hundreds of people in our community, and also with particularly generous support from the William Davidson Foundation, is we digitized the entire contents of the Jewish News, open source, Google-style speed, but also digitized, I referenced earlier, there was another weekly publication, the Jewish Chronicle, which Phil Slomovitz actually bought in 1951. So there's now 100 consecutive years of content at everybody's fingertips, anywhere, any age, any time. And it's really the story of the community, Rabbi, but also it's the story of families, and thousands of families. And what I have found is we've taken this content and it's the ease of accessibility out into the community. We've gone and we've presented to 12 and 13 year olds at religious schools and up at the University of Michigan in their Jewish Communal Service Master's program, et cetera. Probably our most passionate users are people in the younger age groups, because suddenly they're feeling connected to community, to family, even institutions that we all know from research, millennials, younger people are just not connected to organizations, institutions, traditional structures the way their parents or grandparents. So for us, I think in addition to how do we constantly try to present information in the way people want to receive it, that at its core hopefully is seen as credible and reflecting reality, the added value of that digital archive means that a 13-year-old bar mitzvah boy can get up and as part of his bar mitzvah speech say, my name is Chaim Yankel, and I'm named for my great-grandfather, Chaim Yankel. And let me tell you a little bit about my great-grandfather, because I researched him in the Jewish News Foundation digital archive. That makes that person feel so much more connected to a legacy, you know, being part of a legacy, regardless of where technology and other events of the day might take that person.
Okay, fantastic. I'm going to talk about the foundation soon, more in depth. But how do you, I mean, you talk about before about the Jewish News is unique from, say, the Free Press and even Our Magazine because you have a niche. But Judaism, or Jews, rather, two Jews, three opinions. So everybody, you have, for example, like in the subject of Israel and the Palestinians, you have a full spectrum of Jewish people who fervently, and like you should even say the word religiously even, support the idea that the Palestinians should have their own state. And at the other spectrum, you have people who religiously and fervently believe that there shouldn't even be a Palestinian living in Israel. So how do you balance such a wide variety or wide array of opinion and philosophy in the Jewish News and make it presentable, Arthur?
Right. Well, you know, believe it or not, this is where the wisdom of Phil Slomovitz, again, going back 75 years, Rabbi, still comes into play. The first issue of the Jewish News, which is available, by the way, at www.djnfoundation.org, part of that digital archive, he kind of lays out his credo for the Jewish News, and it focuses on being a place where varying opinions can be brought to bear, where good relations with our neighbors and engaging with our neighbors is important. Back then, there were maybe reasons different than now, but my guess is, you know, at a time when anti-Semitism was rampant, and Phil Slomovitz, again, to his credit, on the front lines, even before coming to the Jewish News, tackling Father, you know, head-on Charles Coughlin, and then, of course, Henry Ford, you know, then and earlier than that as well. But it really kind of, that becomes the North Star. One of the challenges is, and again, you know, I'm reminded when I was editing my college daily newspaper a long time ago, I had a little cartoon, and it showed a person reading a newspaper and somebody looking over her shoulder. Not a word in the comic strip box except the image. Second box, the identical image. Third box, the person leaning over says to the person reading the paper, "Hun, isn't it amazing how there's always just enough news to fill a newspaper every day?"
Mm-hmm.
So we all know that, you know, it's kind of like, you know, a police officer, if you're going 26 miles an hour in a 25-mile-an-hour zone, they can pull you over, and technically you're speeding, but they use a certain amount of discretion. So how do you fill a newspaper? So there are always things like Phil Slomovitz's credo that you try as best you can to use as your North Star, as your keystone. The added thing these days, because of technology, is it is probably more or easier than ever to take the array of comments and opinions and, you know, curate them to some extent. But by and large, you know, go to the website and here are all of the additional comments, points of view, et cetera, that just weren't going to fit into the newspaper that in that comic strip amazingly just had enough space for however much news there was in the world that day.
Incredible. Okay, great. Our guest today is Arthur Horowitz, who is the publisher of the Detroit Jewish News, celebrating 75 years, and the launching of the Detroit Jewish News Archive. Let's focus on a little bit of time we have left. What was the real need to take 100 years of Jewish newsprint and digitalize it? You can give us some of the history, some of the philosophy behind it.
Well, you know, one of the things that that jumped out at me, and you mentioned earlier in this conversation, you've been in Detroit for almost 30 years. I've been here a little bit longer. So by Detroit standards, that almost makes us veterans of Detroit. Detroit, unlike other transient communities, a significant percentage of the population born here, raised here, comes back here, et cetera, et cetera. We had a fire in 2002, January 2002. Our building essentially burned down. It was a fire where you had, the general television stations come. They shot film footage and put it on their news shows of flames going out the windows. And there was one shot, I know Fox 2 had it in particular, where it shows a firefighter walking by our burning building, and in the background are all these bound volumes of Jewish newses that you can see on the shelves. After the fire is put out, the usual calls for Rabbi G, was anybody hurt? No. It was a Sunday evening. Are you out of business? Well, we came out one day late. We're still in business. Thankfully, we backed up our stuff off-site. And then the question that caught me a bit off guard, well, what happened to those bound volumes that we saw on TV? And on the one hand, we have microfilm on that, and anybody who's worked with microfilm knows it's needle in a haystack kind of stuff. But it stuck with me at that time, in the midst of that particular disaster that we had endured, that people in the community were saying to me, that's our history there. I hope you're safeguarding it. So if you fast forward to 2011, 2012, there was an opportunity to have an independent nonprofit established to support the educational mission of the Jewish News. And the first decision of the board was, let's take all of that content. Let's make sure that it is forever available, digitized, searchable, free, fast, all of those things. And the board I put together with younger people. And by Detroit standards, when the median age of your board is in the mid-30s, I mean, that's like they're practically in diapers, given the typical median age of boards in our community. And they're the ones that help drive us to digitize, preserve, make available that information. And it serves, we referenced a little earlier the 75th anniversary of the Jewish News, and we put out a 75th anniversary edition. And really the backbone of the 75th anniversary edition was content that we were able to easily access and utilize to help shape that particular 75th anniversary issue. So I think what it comes down to, Rabbi, is 100 years from now, when somebody wants to know about Rabbi Finman and the good things that he did in the community and has been doing in the community, the primary source material that they're going to find will be in the William Davidson Digital Archive of Jewish Detroit history. There won't be any fake news or alternative facts or whatever. It's based on whatever was there at that time without trying to twist it, because 50 years after, you and I are no longer around, that somebody decides that there should be a different narrative about what you did or what I did as well. So in many ways, it's preserving and making, it makes available, but it's really preserving these stories about the community and the individuals who helped shape it, and to preserve it in, perpetuity.
Okay, cool. Just between you and me, Arthur, no one else is listening. Did you ever type in Arthur Horowitz at the Jewish News Foundation?
I have, and what's fun is if you type in Arthur Horowitz the way my name is spelled with one O, you'll instantaneously get every time my name has been mentioned. You can scroll down. There's a little bar, and it'll say the last listing, which is the first time my name was ever mentioned in the Jewish News. But there's also an advanced search, so you can start to refine it, to say around a certain year, and also you can put in search terms that might you know, link me with, you know, one time I was active with the Agency for Jewish Education. I was past president of it here in Detroit. So if you typed in my name and Agency for Jewish Education, you suddenly might have only a handful of entries. So the thing that's fascinating for me is I've talked to so many people who say, oh, there can't be anything in there about me, meaning whoever that person is. They type in their name, or oftentimes a child or grandchild types it in, and they say, look at this. Here's grandma when she was 6 years old at a Purim carnival at the Bnei Moshe synagogue or something like that, or at a Lag BaOmer parade. So the things that are there, as somebody said to me recently, it's like an addiction. And I guess if somebody's going to have an addiction, being selfish, I don't mind if it's to the Jewish news, if you know what I mean.
Not all addictions are bad. Now, I've got a little technical question because I just actually Googled Arthur Horowitz, and I can only go back as far as May 12th, 2016. How do I go back before that? Okay. We'll figure it out. So the you can also do it such you have it set up that if a person wants to know what's happening on a specific day, that they could see what was in the Jewish news on that day, and if it was before the Jewish news was published, they can go back to the Chronicle and what you get is a picture of the actual newspaper itself, and you can sit there and read it. I actually did do that for January 26th, 1950, which that date probably doesn't hold a lot of meaning for a lot of people, but that was the day that the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe passed away, and I wanted to see what the Detroit News or the Chronicle at that time said about the passing, and found out what they did say. So it looks like it's going to be the Foundation Web Archives are a first line for research. And I'm assuming that every edition till now in perpetuity, until they find something better than the internet, is going to be posted at the Jewish News.
Right. Foundation. Well, what we do is there are two things. One is they're posted. What we have, aside from the 75th issue, anniversary issue, is we have about a 12-month lag from when something appears in the Jewish News to when it'll actually show up on the website. Now, as long as you are looking at issues, I'd like to share with you an issue, and some of your listeners may find it fascinating as well. The April 25th, 1930 issue of the Detroit Jewish Chronicle, the front page, it's a fascinating snapshot of the community in 1 week. You have this debate on prohibition at a B'nai B'rith lodge that featured Clarence Darrow. You have Rabbi Fram, who was the rabbi who eventually was the founding rabbi at Temple Beth El, who was taking on H.L. Mencken about what he had to say about Jews. You have a story about kicking off a new building for Congregation Shari Tzedek. Also on this front page, it was a big front page, you had a new Jewish center on Woodward Avenue with plans being revealed. And there is a story talking about the visit, famous Hasidic rabbi here Sunday, noted Lubavitch rabbi to address meetings in synagogues, Rabbi Joseph Isaac Schneerson, known throughout the world as the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And it actually lays out the motorcade route so people could come and wave to him as his car and others following drove through the streets of Detroit. So, that was 1 week. I mean, that's like a year's worth of good news. But if you go to the April 25th, 1930 issue of the Jewish Chronicle, those are the kinds of delights and surprises that you find, aside from things that are personal, you know, whether it's birth announcements or things of that nature, you just have this picture emerging of what kind of a Jewish community we have and, you know, kind of its overall pursuit of the American dream.
Fantastic. Unfortunately, I could talk for another hour about this whole business. It really is very fascinating. So where do you envision your, you have a goal, I'm sure, coming up, because you can't rest on your laurels. Where do you envision the Jewish News going from here, Arthur?
Well, look, the challenge is, again, how to stay relevant, how to look at what we do, not just in the context of information gathering and disseminating, you know, how do we, you know, using technology, do a better job engaging with our readers, with our audience, and have it be more of a of an interactive conversation, if I can even call it a conversation. But you know, the Jewish News, one of the things that it has done from time to time is it's been a convener of sorts, or it has the ability to bring together the community or our community with other communities, and you know, the ability for that to take place, I think, gets more and more challenged, and I think that, you know, our role, our continuing role, is both how to advocate for for survival of the Jewish people. I mean, you get right down to it, we're an advocacy publication. We admit it, but there's, as you pointed out earlier, how do you fit all the range of opinions about what that means? And our challenge is how to lay out those range of views, but to ultimately have at the core that, the conversations, the points of views, the disagreements are all part and parcel of how ultimately, you know, we see ourselves continuing, as a Jewish people. And our challenge every day, not just, 10 years from now, but it's been, is how do we do that in a way where the community, feels that we are, credible, we're trying to get it right. We often do, and sometimes we don't, but that our intentions will continue to be good ones in terms of being a common thread for our community for decades to come.
Wonderful, wonderful. Okay, that's unfortunately, we'll have to wrap it up at this point. Arthur, thank you so much, and I'm looking forward to having you back on when the Jewish News is celebrating its 100th anniversary. It's only 25 years.
Alevi, 100 and Sponsic, but by then, yeah. Somebody definitely will have had to discover the fountain of youth for us.
We're both still very young, Arthur. Don't
you know? Thank you. It's hard.
Okay, thank you so much for coming on. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to the Jewish News.
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Joel Finman, you're listening to the Jewish News. And no, I have not, I don't know, I'm going to say maybe yet, entered my name into the Detroit Jewish News to see how many articles my name appeared in. But you could do it. I happen to know because we saved every article that has anything to do with me, and I have it in a file. But now I don't mind if the file gets lost or something happens to it or absolutely becomes totally and completely yellow. Up next, for your listening pleasure, this is Baruch Shalom, and the piece is called Ki Elecha Einayim. To you, meaning to God, are our eyes. Da man aser
Assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. Just because we can, I'm going to play another song for you. This one's called Budapest. The featured artist is Karsten Troika, and it's on his recently released song album called Lost Yiddish Songs. Let's listen.
Ich bin a Bucher, jungen Freilich, ich will sich gib. Es bringt sich mir noch Liebe, es bringt sich mir noch Glück. Ich will gehen in alle Gassen, immer schreien Gewalt. Am Mädele geht er mir bald. Weil ich bin eine Buche, jung und frisch. Ich gehe sich aus, man mich verrakisch. Treff ich mir ein Lotsche von Jenke, sie hat Päulische nicht mehr stinken. Jetzt ein Koch am Atisch, Fisch. Spiel Zigeine auf dein Fiedel, spiel mir ab ein Liebesliedel, weil ich hab gelost mein Herz in Budapest, in der Nacht, wenn die Lewunde hat gescheint. Ich hab gewollt mit ihr bauen ein Nest, und sie hat von mir sich ausgelacht. Ich hab gemeint, sie liebt mich einen, sie liebt nur mich, in mehr nicht keinen. Ich hab gemeint, ich kein Vertrauen, falsch ist sie wie alle Frauen, bei dir, oh Gott, ich hab sie gelost, Stein. Spiel Zigeine auf dein Fiedel, spiel mir ein Liebeslied, weil ich hab gelost mein Herz in Budapest, in die Nacht, wenn die Lewunde hat gescheint. Ich hab
mit ihr bo in am Nest. In sie hat von mir sich ausgelacht. Ich hab gemeint, sie liebt mich einem. Sie liebt nur mich, in der Meer nicht keinem. Ich hab gemeint, ich kenn Vertrauen. Falsch ist sie wie alle Frauen. Bei dem Drogat, ich hab sie gelostgesteigt. Schrein gewalt, am Mädele geht er mir bald. Weil ich bin eine Buche jungen frisch, ich geh sich aus, man mich war a Kisch. Treff ihr mir a Lotsche von Jenke, sie hat Päulische nicht mehr denken, jetzchen koch am Atisch, Fisch. Spiel Zigeine auf dein Fiedel.
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Herr Schulterman, here you are listening Hour. This week is the portion of Akev. It can be found in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 7. Very famous part of something that falls into this week's portion is the second paragraph of the Shema. V'haya Akev Tishmu El Mitzvah Yisai. Excuse me. V'haya Akev Shema Tishmu El Mitzvah Yisai. Asher Anechi Mitzavacha Hayem Alevavah. And if you will listen to my voice and you will do my commandments. There is a talk, a discussion in the Talmud, as to the nature of this paragraph. One of the questions that comes up is, how is it that the first paragraph of the Shema is the first paragraph of the Shema, and the second paragraph of the Shema is the second paragraph of the Shema? Nowhere does it say, well, the first paragraph the Shema is in chapter 6, and the second paragraph of the Shema is in chapter 11 of the book of Deuteronomy. So this one came beforehand. That's why we put it first. No, that doesn't even come up, interestingly enough. But what does come up is that the first paragraph of the Shema, its function is to instruct people that they have to accept God as boss. When we say, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one." What we are doing with that statement is saying, God, you're in charge. The second paragraph talks about the importance of fulfilling the commandments. So there is actually a discussion among some of the, some of the middle authorities. We're talking the 1300s, which in Judaism, that's kind of like right in the middle of things. As to whether there is a commandment to believe in God. Now, so this might seem perplexing. Like, why shouldn't there be a commandment to believe in God? Maimonides, the famous scholar, says belief in God is mitzvah number one. A generation later, the scholar Nachmanides Ramban maintains that there is no mitzvah to believe in God because all the mitzvahs say you should do such and such. Like in this week's portion, it says you should put on tefillin, you should have a mezuzah on your door, you should learn Torah, etc. So those are commandments. It doesn't say anywhere in the Bible that you should believe in God. But rather, Nachmanides maintains, it's a precursor. How could I do any of the commandments if I don't accept God as like given, obvious? So it's not a commandment. Belief in God is something that we inherently just feel. So now, what can we do? Is now that we have that, now we can understand and stress the importance of mitzvahs. What is so important about doing the commandments? It's always been, since the days following Joshua, the people who were scrupulous about fulfilling the commandments in the Talmud have been a minority. So why then is there this need for fulfilling the commandments? What does it do? People live happy lives without fulfilling commandments. But that's not what it's about. It's not about being happy. It's about being, there or being true. What is it that we're here for? There's a story, this is not the story I'm going to tell later, but there's a story, simply the young man came to the first Lubavitcher Rebbe and said, I need this and I need that and I need this. And the rabbi looked at him and said, you say what you need, but you don't state what you are needed for. So this seems to be something that we have to really take into consideration now. I'm not here for instant gratification. Everybody, 7.5 billion people, and I got news for you, millions and zillions of organisms throughout the entire creation were created with a specific purpose. And that purpose is to make the world a better place. So that after 120 years, the world which we occupied for those 120 years is a better place. When we say better, what do we mean better? Better doesn't mean better battery in your cell phone. That's not how we're going to quantify better as far as the world goes. But is there more of a spiritual awareness? And you could say, listen, the world's a very big place. Yeah, granted. But if a person starts with themselves and tries to create this spiritual awareness within themselves, they will then automatically have an effect on those people who they come in contact with. And since they've had a positive effect on those people with whom they've come in contact with, those people will have a positive effect on the people that they've come in contact with. Somebody put forth that there's this idea of there's only 6 degrees of separation between everybody in the world. So all it takes is like 6 times, for this positive thing that you've done to ripple around the world and have a positive effect on the world. Speaking of positive effects, we're going to take a quick commercial break and we're going to be right back. We've got an awesome Hasidic story coming up. Don't go away. You're listening to the Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Spex Howard. The Spex Howard School of Media Arts is proud to have been a sponsor of the Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding comes from its sponsors, listeners like you help keep the Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to the Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. That's 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. Your help is greatly appreciated. Thank you very much.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to The Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? Go to my website, rabbifinman.com, rabbifinman.com. You'll find right there on the homepage a way to contact me. Easy schmeasy. You don't have to go looking for it. I hate when you have to do that. You'll also find archived editions of the show. Want to hear last week's show? You missed last week? Oh, man. No worries. Go to rabbifinman.com. There it will be. So, and in its fullness. In fact, let's say you started listening, you just heard of it for some reason, and you didn't know that the Jewish Hour, almost two years of Jewish Hour programs on the website. It's a wonderful thing. Let me know how that goes. Contact me at rabbifinman.com. You'll also find archived editions of the E-Parsha, U-Parsha, Hasidic U-Stories, ways in which yours truly presents Judaism in an interesting and educational way. And there's also the very important donations page. We are in August. Yes! We're still hoping to get June paid off. The people, I just had a long talk with the station manager over here. Yeah, they like me. They was, you know, I'm pretty good. I'm only 3 months behind. Yeah, we, you know, this big smile. So we hope. So I'm making the deal right now. If people will donate to the Jewish Hour and we get enough donations to pay for June, July, and August before the end of August, then I don't sit here and make these claims that are requests that you please go to the Jewish Hour, go to the donations page, click on the number that you want to give, or click on the other and donate what you would like to do. And it's all safe, very effective through PayPal. And you can even do it monthly. We have a whole bunch of people that are doing $5 every month, which is great. If we had 100,000 people giving me $5 a month, that would be, I wouldn't have to sit here. I would tell longer stories. That's exactly what I would do. Your promise. If you do it and we get over this hump, you get a longer story, a better story. So that's it. Speaking of the story, so do that. If you don't like doing internet giving, understand, place your donation in an envelope. Put a stamp in the upper right-hand corner and in the center of the envelope on the front. Address it to The Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. And, of course, your donation is tax deductible. You can deduct it from your tithing, your 10%, which means you'll be good in the eyes of the IRS. You'll be good in the eyes of the Almighty. And because the Jewish Hour, which has now been on air for 21 years, will continue, the rest of the world will appreciate you. And you can just do it with just a small check. There you go. Okay, anyway, the story involves a certain rabbi whose name was Simcha of Bubraka. Bubraka is a small city located many thousands of miles east of Grosse Pointe Farms. That's all I know about. So this Simcha Bubraka, who is actually an erudite scholar and whose name is quoted in many books written in the late 1700s, I'm not sure if he wrote a book himself, but he's quoted because of his erudition, was once deathly ill, like gray, like pallor, like goner, like call the burial society, that sick. His mom went off to Reb Elimelech of Lizhansk asking, could he please pray on behalf of her son, this erudite scholar. And he said, when he gets better, he should go visit my twin brother, Zusha of Anapoli. He says, but before that, this Friday, your paretz, your count, is going to have a party. And there are going to be three doctors there. Go to the party and ask that the three doctors come and examine your son. Now, what's going to happen is they're going to say, it's beyond hope. Go get the burial society. They're going to go out. One of them is going to trip on your front doorstep. And as they're picking him up, one of them is going to remember, you know, there is a medicine that might help this person. And they're going to come back in. They're going to prescribe the medicine. He's going to get better. And at that point, you should go to Reb Zusha, my twin brother. The woman was ecstatic and could not believe that the story played out exactly as Reb Elimelech of Lizhansk told it. And this medicine was prescribed, whatever it was, I don't know what the condition was, and he slowly got better. Now, this Simcha of Bubraka was not a follower of any Hasidic rabbi, but when his mother told him all that had happened, he said, "We have to go and thank Elimelech of Lizhansk." And so they went to Lizhansk, which is also many miles east of Grosse Pointe Farms, to thank him. And the first thing that Elimelech said to this Reb Simcha was, "Have you gone to visit my brother?" And he said, "I'm not up to it yet. I'm not 100%. So he said, "Please do it as soon as you possibly can." And so, yes, he did indeed make the trip to Anapoli, which is located also many miles east of Grosse Pointe Farms. As soon as he came into town, an older gentleman came up to him. It was said to him, "Ooh, I need a guest for my meal tonight. Can you come home with me, Reb Simcha?" And he's like, "How did he know my name? I never saw him before." So he said, "Please come, come." So he started following behind him, and he saw a kid, and he asked the kid, "Who's this guy?" And he said, "Oh, that's Reb Zusha. That's the Rebbe." So when he showed up, I think it was actually a Friday afternoon, he showed up and he sat down and said, "Please, you probably haven't had a chance to review the portion. Please review the portion." He sat down, reviewed the portion. They made it all the way to the mikveh, and he took him to the mikveh. He said, "Listen, when you go to the mikveh, you have to go to the mikveh while I'm under the water." He went into the water. He came out. He felt something strange. So Reb Zusha asked his Reb Simcha, "Do you have any questions in your learning?" He said, "Sure, I have lots of questions in my learning. There's tons of things I don't understand." So he said, "Go back to my house and open a Talmud." So he went back, he opened the Talmud. The questions were gone. All of his questions, not even questions anymore. He had them, they're all answered. And he became an ardent follower of this Reb Zusha. That's going to do it for us. They all lived happily ever after, and I hope you do too. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope we had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have an awesome week. I am going to be this Tuesday night at the Bottom Line Coffee House telling stories in Yinglish. That's at 7 o'clock, and that's on 3rd Avenue in the Broadway Apartments. I hope to see you there. Until next week, take care.